Hello and welcome to the Carnival of Bastards, the show where we make fun of Doctor Who because we love it. My name is David Innes.
My name is St. John Carp. You can see me twirling my cape, can't you?
No, not the mind probe.
Some call me Tim.
And today what we're doing is we're looking at our top 10 cliffhangers as an excuse as to why I haven't gone and watched the Romans yet.
Plus the fact that we were all horribly ill and contagious for a long, long time.
Not that you and Radio Lab probably care, but, you know, please, some sympathy. So
have sympathy for my arse injections, will you?
Sure. That was too much information. So we're discussing about criteria. Sinjin, what was your criteria for your best cliffhangers?
It was suspense and the power of the scene rather than simply because it was iconic or because it had a large impact on the rest of the show. But I found, strangely, that the really iconic ones were iconic for a reason. It wasn't just because they were really famous. It's because they're actually very, very suspenseful and tense.
There's a reason why they're iconic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there aren't reasons for why a lot of things are famous, but this is justified.
That's very true. And also, it would be also great to look at our worst cliffhangers. Might be able to have a look at that shortly.
Oh, hell yes.
But for me, my criteria is I liked game changers. I liked ones that weren't just tacked on. I really like episodes where the cliffhanger just meant either something awful was going to happen, you didn't know what was going to happen, but more importantly, that the resolution wasn't going to be, you know, a total massive cop-out.
I'll disagree with that last criterion, actually, because the cliffhanger can be great, even if the next episode utterly fails to deal with it in a sensible way.
True, but it helped me eliminate.
Yeah, that's true. It was quite tough to eliminate the ones that didn't make the cut.
Yeah. And it's also very hard to sort of order your top 10, but we've tried. Yeah. So shall we start with number 10?
Let's.
So for my number 10 cliffhanger is An Unearthly Child Part 1. This is from the very first story of Doctor Who, that basically the Doctor sets the controls of the TARDIS. There's a whole lot of craziness. There's some Norman Kay vibraphone incidental music. Everything goes a bit haywire, and the TARDIS goes through space, time and space, and lands in this place where there's a shadow figuring it. If you put your mind, you know, above the fact that we know all about Doctor Who, this is probably not the first story you ever watched, you go, what the hell's just happened? You don't know how this is going to resolve. You don't know what's out there. You don't know where they've landed. You don't know if the teachers are unconscious. All you know is that everything has changed. Sure, the next few episodes are a bit crap, but the point is that that moment is brilliant.
It's an interesting choice. I wouldn't have... I in fact, didn't even think of An Unearthly Child, just because we already know so much about Doctor Who that the revelation that they can travel, or that they've gone from London to this rocky wilderness, it would have been had a quite a large impact at the time, but yeah, I guess it just doesn't do it anymore. But that's because I've got my, you know, 2020 goggles on.
Yeah, I still use it as a sort of a nice example of the wonder of the TARDIS. Most people like go, oh yeah, it's this thing that's big on the inside. This is like, what the freaking, oh god, my brain, sort of reaction to the TARDIS. And I think...
Is that the first time we get the space-time vortex? Or it's implied that the opening credits are the space-time vortex?
Well, it is. It's the first episode. And it's one of the only times.
Yeah.
The fourth Doctor sequence is used as a sort of entry to the Matrix in The Deadly Assassin, but that's about it.
It's only specifically, even visually, it's only specifically visually referred to later in the seventh Doctor, when we actually see the TARDIS sort of in a bubble traveling around. Every time before that, it's just been some shot of space, like in the fifth or sixth Doctor credits, or an abstract sort of tunnel.
Or the Darth Vader mask in early John Pertwee.
So, yeah, you know. I've never quite liked having the Doctor's gigantic fucking face in the opening credits. The TARDIS automatically reverts to being the Doctor's face when it's in the vortex.
I have a soft spot for the face, but that's not what we're here to discuss. We're not discussing our top 10 title sequences.
You face liker.
We're talking about cliffhangers, so you're number 10.
My number 10, it is a Seventh Doctor story, and the only Seventh Doctor story on my list, if I may blow the story wide open on that one. It's Remembrance of the Daleks Part 2, where Ace has just beat up the Dalek with a baseball bat and is running through the corridors of Coal Hill School and gets cornered by three Daleks in the corridor. And they're all shouting, she's got her rocket launcher, she can't figure out what she's going to do. The music's great, it's really intense. It's just a wonderful cliffhanger, you know? Really solid effort.
I have to disagree. I'm not a fan of this cliffhanger, primarily because it's... and again, you can argue about resolution, sure. This would be on the good category, but not in my top 10. Primarily because, to me, it's another one of those Dalek shouty cliffhangers which you know someone's going to stop them. Part of me just says, I'll just kill her, for God's sake. I'll shoot something. They're just shouting. There's no shooting at all. And it's like Ace is just waiting for the end of the episode so that the next one we can get it resolved.
Is this just because you don't like the Doctor's rainbow orgasm machine that saves the day at the start of the next episode?
Part of me wants to say yes, I do hate that as well.
Well, hang on, what was the resolution to Unearthly Child Part 1? You know, there is no resolution to that cliffhanger.
But they open... It's the whole idea that they slowly wake up. They're suspicious where they are. They open up. It's slow. It's well-paced. It's suspenseful. It's great. I'm not personally attacking you for your choice. Stop being so defensive.
Okay. I will calm down. I don't know if the child was a really good choice.
I'm just saying that I like that. I like Remembrance of the Daleks. That is a good cliffhanger. It's not on my top 10.
It's by far not the worst shouty Dalek cliffhanger. There are much worse.
That is true. And funny enough, speaking of shouty Dalek cliffhanger, we're going to my number 9.
Please.
Because number 9 is part 3 of Power of the Daleks. It's not to be mistaken with part 5. Part 5 is the classic Daleks Conquer and Destroy, which... is overkill. Part 3, it's that great menacing, we will get our power, we will get our power, we will get our power. And that to me is great because it was the first time I was used in that story. It's so, at this point.
Were you David Graham in another life?
Maybe.
I think you were.
We are the masters of Earth.
Really good choice with Power of the Daleks. I'm behind you on that one.
To me, this particular episode, more so than later, is the big collar tugging episode, because the Daleks. I think it's in this episode where we finally revealed that there's more than one that is active, and that they go and they're going to destroy everyone. Whereas when they repeat it later in part 5, it's like, we know you're going to conquer and destroy. Just shut up and get on with it.
By that point, they have manufactured many more Daleks, or at least many more Dalek cutouts.
Yes, exactly right. And that, to me, is not a great cliffhanger. I just think this first one, we will get our power. It's the way it's said. It's really menacing. It's really evil. And you just think, well, that's the end of the colony.
Well, my number 9 is not quite so high-minded. It's sort of a left-field one, I think. But for pure drama, for pure, what the fuck is going to happen next? I think it steals the show. It's part 3 of The Hand of Fear, when Eldrad opens up the door to something or another and gets shot with a gigantic fucking spear in the middle of the chest. And it's so dramatic, there's this thud and she whirls around and cut to credits and wonderful stuff.
And it's one of the few times where our villain gets a cliffhanger.
That's very true. Look, although we don't know she's a villain at that point.
No. I've never thought of that. I will say that is a pretty good cliffhanger. In fact, I hadn't actually thought much of The Hand of Fear. That's actually... Because it's instant. You often have this... I know we've had this argument about, you know, starting stories with someone walking down and getting shot and then cut to TARDIS and it was like, releases mystery. I think this is much better that we're in this sort of strange sort of, you know, Antarctic-type planet and then suddenly, bam, in the chest. I will not poo-poo that. There is no poo-pooage on this side of the Atlantic. Or Pacific.
I'm so thrilled you like End of Fear as well. Why didn't it come to you when you were thinking of good cliffhangers, out of curiosity?
Because I just didn't think of the story, because I don't that cliffhanger doesn't come into my head immediately. I didn't think of that. I always often think of cliffhangers, things that impact the story or impact the Doctor or whatever else, and that was one that didn't just strike into my head, because I also haven't watched The Hand of Fear in, like, a gazillion years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's one of the ones I grew up watching a lot of, and I seem to remember that clip was used at some point. And the image has always stuck with me. It's always been a really powerful scene.
I remember it from a Babel Color music video, and that's about it.
Well, would you like to take it away with number eight?
Yeah, number eight. Now, number eight, I actually swapped around with number seven.
Cheating.
I know.
Get out. Go
get
and never darken my towels again.
Did you say darken or dampen?
Let's just run with both, shall we?
Okay.
Don't darken them, but you're free to dampen them with whatever moisture you happen to have on you.
Right. Well, this story is one that you hate immensely. Not the ultimate hating episode, but it's one that you do hate.
And this Timelash.
No, it's not that one.
Oh, thank God. That's the ultimate hate one, I think.
Yeah, that is your ultimate hate one. It's not your ultimate hate one, but it's close to that list, which is part one of Frontios. I like part one of Frontios for one particular reason, because it's so ludicrous you want to know why. And that's when so the Doctor's in this is basically still finding it very difficult to convince everyone that he's okay in this space colony that's getting things thrown at them from the asteroids and things, that he's actually not bad. And then the TARDIS disappears, and all that's left is the hat stand. And the Doctor says, the TARDIS is destroyed. Now, as someone for me watching going, the TARDIS can't be destroyed. What the level of arse is this? Is one thing. And then two, why on earth did the hat stand not get sucked down as well? That's another thing. And so it was that crazy, ridiculous situation that made me go, what? And that's why I put that as number eight. It was a ridiculous...
I can see it. I can see why that you'd pick that one. Mm. I mean, Frontios is a way over-the-top story, but it's got a lot of good elements in it. I love the disappearing under the Earth, the destruction of the TARDIS, even if the hat stand's still there. You know, it's all good stuff. It's just that... The Tractators, and Turlu, to be honest.
Well, the Tractator, especially when the lead Tractator does that funny dance when he dies.
Yes. Oh, I'd forgotten he did that dance when he dies. I'm putting together a list of disco dances that people do when they kick it.
He does the Michael Jackson's Thriller, because he does the hands to one end and hands to the other. It's great. But I think it's that level of... That, to me, is like, what could possibly happen? That's why I love it. And I think there's also part of me going, so what, the Tractators completely analyze the TARDIS and went, yeah, don't need that hat stand.
Well, they don't wear hats, do they?
No, that's why they didn't need it. So that's why I put at number eight Frontios. I just think it was a great moment of what the hell. Your number eight.
My number eight is another great moment. It's not a game changer or anything. It's just a really solid piece of drama. It's part two of The Deadly Assassin, when the Doctor is in the Matrix and he's being haunted by this spectre in like a World War One gas mask. And the cliffhanger is where he's on the train tracks.
Ah, I know the one.
Snapshot on his leg. And the old, I don't know if it's a coal locomotive or something, comes thundering down the tracks with the guy with the mask sitting in the front. God, that's creepy. I mean, that is a really scary moment.
That is. In fact, that whole episode is freaky. I still think looking at the clown in the mirror in the sand.
Absolutely.
Freaky as hell. And all the syringes and things. I think there was complaints that kids wouldn't want to get inoculations after watching that episode. I wouldn't blame them. But yeah, that is... I had actually thought of that at the time, but I don't know, maybe it just didn't impact me so much, but that's certainly in the good category.
One of the things I think that really sells it on reflection is Tom Baker's acting, because he can do all kinds of squeals and screams and God knows what, as if he's really desperate and scrabbling, like when the samurai is about to cut his sword, bring his sword down on the Doctor's scarf and cut him loose down the cliff. You know, Tom Baker really sells the whole mirage thing. And he does it again in this scene.
But I also like to think it was excellent direction from David Maloney, I think, was probably yes. one of the other things.
Absolutely.
As we see later, Tom Baker is an excellent actor, but when he's got a crap director, he's crap. So, no, I would, and part of me thinks I should have included that in my list. That's how much I respect that cliffhanger. I actually think I probably should have put that in my list. I did not think of that at all. And an excellent, excellent thing. My number 7, which was originally my number 8, my number 7, is actually part 8 of the War Games. And this is a particular part of the War Games where the Doctor appears to be treacherous to his friends. And he has them all surrounded. Because it's this point, the reason why I like this is, one, there is the obvious thing that has the Doctor really turned. We know he wouldn't have. But it's the thing is, what is his plan? What's going in that little head of the Patrick Troughton? What's going in that Doctor's head? And you know something drastic's happening. What's that massive plan? And you just need to know, I mean, to me, to be honest, that whole story, I would argue not that in my top 10, 9 of the top 10 cliffhangers should be the War Games, because it just moves and everything happens, apart from maybe the pissweak Romans running at them. Because
that's a surprising choice, actually, because I thought you would have... Well, mate, do you have any other War Games episodes
higher
up on your list?
I do.
Well, I won't preempt them then, but no. I figured that there are some game-changing episodes and there are some really suspenseful episodes in that story, which I figure might go higher up on the list. Yeah.
I didn't include the Doctor and Jamie and Zoe running slow-mo to the TARDIS. Not on my list. That's
a pretty good cliffhanger, though.
That is a good cliffhanger. It's on my list of good cliffhangers, but it doesn't impact me in the same way as this one and the other one from the War Games, which we'll talk about a little bit later, does. But yeah, that's my number.
Speaking of Jamie and Zoe running slowly, I was sorely tempted to put part something of the Mind Robber in where Jamie and Zoe get shut in the book, which I always thought was very creepy.
Yes, I was putting that because I was thinking about the Mind Robber, and I was thinking I was either part one or that part, because I love those, but they didn't. I was just thinking, out of all the ones, that's probably the least. There's so many other more impacting ones, but yes, I again put that in our good category.
Yeah, it didn't make the cut, I'm afraid.
So your number 7.
My number 7 is an iconic one. It's part 6 of the invasion, when the Cybermen are walking down, they jump out of the sewers, the sewer lids fly off, and the Cybermen start walking down the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral. Fucking great.
That
is an amazing...
That doesn't even need analysis. That's so great, I'm feeling stupid for not thinking of it. That's how great that is.
It's one of the more obvious ones, and I was hesitant to put the obvious ones on my list, but it's obvious for a reason. It's that good.
It's good because there's no typical cliffhanger music.
Oh, really? Is it silent?
Well, it's just got the sound of the reanimating, that neow, 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 neow. And so that's acting as this sort of droning noise as they're marching, and it's almost like a silent march, and it's wonderful.
I hadn't thought of that.
It's really just the horror of it. They're everywhere. For the love of God, they're everywhere.
I did cut other Cyberman cliffhangers from my list, even with the music. Like, I had to cut an episode of The Moonbase, the one where they realize there's a Cyberman in the room with them, and it jumps off the table, and there's that wonderful music, and it's scary. But nothing quite stands up to... Cybermen in the sewers.
Yeah, I was about to say, speaking of Cybermen, one on my good list, but I still think it's poorly executed, is Earthshock Part 3, where you've got the many armies of the Cybermen, and it's done that stupid split-screen thing, which just looks crap.
No, I thought it was a good, solid cliffhanger. It's in the good bucket, though.
Yeah, it is.
It's not in the eternally relevant bucket.
Yes, if it was to go in a bucket, it's definitely the good, you know... Quality bucket. It's not.
Put this in the quality bucket.
Yeah.
Quality, mind you.
Yes.
Don't put it in the shabby bucket.
No, not the one with the holes in it. No.
No.
And certainly don't put it in the bucket to forget.
Yes. Bucket to forget. Bucket of forgetfulness.
Yes. I like that. Send them to the bucket of forgetfulness.
Did you have a number six?
Number six is actually episode... Oh, I have. I think that says episode two. I'm sure it is. It's episode two of Spearhead from Space. This is the one where Ransom... What? Ransom is in the factory. Oh. He's fighting his... And he got that... The Cyberman... The Auton slowly walking off its plinth towards him. And the reason why I like is because it's so... The music does everything with this. That do-noom-noom-ball. And it's just... It's that look out behind you. Oh, for the love of God. The only thing that slightly ruins this cliffhanger is his hilarious comedy face when he looks horrified.
Yeah, that is a very rubber-faced actor, I've always thought.
Yeah. But
he's great at dribbling tea out of his mouth.
Oh,
he's got perfect lips for not retaining liquid.
That sounds like some dates I've had.
I was sorely tempted to put down an episode from Spearhead from Space, especially because it is one of my all-time favorite stories. But I feel like it's one of the stories where the individual cliffhangers aren't really as good as the story itself. Yeah. And if that scene where the Autons come to life in the middle of the day in the shops and start mowing people down, if that were actually a cliffhanger and not in the middle of the episode, I'd have chosen that in a heartbeat. But
well, that is an iconic moment, so much so that I had to go to the place that they recorded that at, you know.
Yes, I've seen the footage. It's basically you running down the street doing the music.
Yeah.
Down, down, doo-doo-doo.
Yes, we all have. But nonetheless, it's that particular episode to me, that cliffhanger is so creepy. I love it immensely. And that's why
it's a good choice.
I was actually trying to find to fill in the slot, maybe something from Inferno, but there was no cliffhangers apart, even that really sort of spoke out. But nonetheless, that's episode. That's my number. What, six? What's your number six?
I've chosen another iconic one here, and I tried to at least keep the iconic ones out of the upper ranks. It's part one of the Daleks.
Oh, yeah.
Can you blame me?
No, that is an excellent bit. Even if it's some guy with the plunger, you know, on the other side of the camera.
It's not just great for being a landmark in Doctor Who, for introducing the Daleks, for launching the show. It's great because it's a suspenseful shot, you know? It genuinely does look alien. It genuinely does have suspense, even if the rest of the Daleks is a snore fest. Which the last 10 million parts are.
I'm so glad you agree.
What? Nobody likes the ending of the Daleks, do they?
No. I don't even remember what... Like, something
I remember whole episodes with them jumping over pits. And it's basically, easy, easy now, easy. Whoa, don't go mad.
25,
for 40 minutes.
25 minutes later, easy, easy. Yeah. That's too much. Yeah.
And then finally one guy, you know, falls down the pit and it's like, thank Christ for that. Why did that not happen an hour ago?
Yeah.
When I still had my sanity, my youth, and my virginity.
Terry Nation. Just taking too damn long to say nothing. So, yeah, I didn't think of that. That's definitely in the good bucket for me. Not in my top tier, but I almost think it should be, like, that would be, like, a number 9 or number 10 for me. But nonetheless, I will highly respect your choice. And I'm really intrigued because we're now halfway. We're now to number 5.
We are.
And I'm looking at my list and going, mine aren't all that iconic. And I'm just thinking, this is really, really interesting. And I'm so glad that at present, we haven't selected the same ones.
This is true. Although we have come close. You'll find out which one in a couple of items, but go on.
I reckon I've got one that you'll have. I reckon. Yeah. I reckon I've got one you'll have, but we'll see. So, at number 5 is the other part from the War Games, which is the War Games Part 1. And the reason why I love this cliffhanger is
part
because...
Part 1? What happens in Part 1?
One of the things I love about this cliffhanger is you don't... It's like, really? That was it. That was 25 minutes worth of episode. So, part one of the War Games, the Doctor lands in World War One trench, gets captured by the Allies, and then is sent to a firing squad. And that's the cliffhanger. And you think, what?
Did
that happen? And you see you hear the shots, you hear see him gurning. Yeah, you know he's going to get out of it, but it's that sort of, what? And that, to me, it's that quick paste of that episode with that cliffhanger. And that cliffhanger, him on a phone screen, how the hell is he going to get into this one? That just, it's the, this is the power of the cliffhanger to make you stay watching.
Agreed. And especially firing squad cliffhangers, I've always found those to be incredibly suspenseful because there's no way to get out of a firing squad.
No.
And you always put yourself in that position.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what if I was in front of a firing squad? What would I do at the last second to get out of it?
Mm.
And there's never been a good answer in any of the fiction that I've watched.
Mm.
There's always like some last minute reprieve and it's like, well, fuck, I can't depend on that.
Come on, reprieve.
Yeah. I need to like pull hankies out of my pocket or do something.
So what other parts of the war games would you see? I don't know if you've put war games down. As
I haven't, I'm free to talk about it. But I would have thought one of the later parts where, like, we see Time Lords for the first time or something like that.
Well, we actually don't see Time Lords until the middle of part 10.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, hang on. There's also the scene where the Sidrite is crushing them to death. That's pretty good.
That is also another great one as well. But to me, it was definitely part one. Part one, it was just so quick. And Terrence Dix is wonderful at setting lots of things to happen to me. Basically, the War Games is a target novel. A really long target novel that you just got to keep on watching.
It does go by surprisingly quickly. For a 10-episode story, it doesn't drag as much as you'd expect.
Right.
And I know you're a huge fan.
I am an immense fan. I can watch it 5 hours in a row. In fact, I might even do so today.
Good man.
although I should be doing some marking. I might do it at the same time. Who knows?
Well, my number five is one that I love so hard, I am tempted to bump it up even now.
Right.
But I will leave it at where it is for the time being. It's and I think the past couple of mine have been Tom Baker stories. This is The Pirate Planet Part 3, where the Doctor walks the plank.
Ah.
It's brilliant for two reasons. One, because it is so suspenseful and funny as well. It's a funny cliffhanger where the Doctor says, you know, you can't be serious, and Mr. Fibuli gives this sort of regretful nod, you know, Christ, yes, don't question the plank. And he shoots him off.
I love what? That, don't question the plank.
It's that grave little nod that Mr. Fibuli gives, and the captain shoots the Doctor off the end of the plank. And the second reason it's great is the fantastic resolution next episode, where the Doctor just walks back into the room. Only Douglas Adams could have done something that insane and brilliant.
I will have to grant you. It's not one that strikes in my memory because The Pirate Planet is one of those stories that is not on my huge sort of radar. It's on my radar. I haven't watched it that many times. But I will grant you that that is an excellent resolution to otherwise lovely, light-hearted comedy story. I will grant you that. But again, this is where our tastes differ. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Douglas Adams' Doctor Who work. And The Pirate Planet's all right, but it's not one of my ultimate favourites. I think it's still quite good. But yeah, I think Bruce Purchase is the best part of that whole story.
God, yes. No, he does a great job.
Moons of Madness!
Who else could have delivered such insane dialogue?
Brian Blessed.
By the left frontal lobe of the Sky Demon? No, my all-time favourite, which is, I said, you dare lay the rotting fruits of your own incompetence at my door!
If it wasn't Bruce Purchase, it would definitely be Brian Blessed, would be the other choice I would have gone with.
Yes. Yeah. Is this just fat, shouty Englishman that you're running through now?
Yeah, you know, well, that's
top 10 fat, shouty Englishman.
Or Tom Baker is the villain, you know. You know, that's the other person who would have been. So we're up to number four. We're heading ever so close to number four. Number four for me, an unusual choice, I think. It's one that sticks in my mind. And there's a number of cliffhangers from this particular episode that could have worked. This is the one for me that was the most boah, or how is this going to get resolved? Part two of The Leisure Hive. And this is the one where the Doctor goes in to try and fix up the machine, the rejuvenation machine, and he ages, like, but, you know, several hundred years. He's got the old man makeup.
That's an unusual choice, because I would have picked part one of where that he gets story split where apart. The Doctor gets dismembered. Yeah.
I mean, that one is has got great shock value, but there's something rather genteel and whatever is that he's now aged. What? How? What? And so, and you don't know how this is going to be repaired, whereas the splitting apart to me is like, well, he looks like he's dead. The Doctor's never dead. You know, he's just going to be a trap of some kind, but it's that one that you think, well, he's not dead, but he is horribly aged. How's he going to get out of this one?
What I like about him being horribly aged is that BBC's old person makeup in the 1970s was apparently better than the BBC's old person makeup in the new series, where all the old people look exactly the same.
Yes, they did do that. They did do old people makeup very well then. Maybe it was the lighting, I don't know. Maybe it was just had lesser expectations.
I'm sorry, is there an old person light that you can shine on someone that makes them look 40 years older?
Yes, yes, there is. It's it's a sort of light green. So yeah, a gentle cliffhanger. I just think it's a great game changer, or maybe not so much a game changer, but definitely a how the hell are you going to get out of the one. I like that one.
It is a gentle cliffhanger, actually, but for the Leisure Hive, there's also the next part of that where the Formazi walks in and rips the mask off the lawyer. Yeah. That's pretty damn scary.
That is very much very true as well. But this is the one I've chosen. So, you're number four.
So you can stick it.
But now, because I feel like it's like, yeah, all those other ones are good. Maybe my choice was crap.
Well, my number four, this is the one you came perilously close to choosing earlier. Power of the Daleks Part 2. Right. I am your servant. Oh my god, that's creepy.
Especially as it keeps talking over the Doctor. Oh, of course, that yes. is an excellent one, yeah. I wholeheartedly, because the Doctor's there panicky. Everyone's going, oh, isn't it cute? He's going, oh god, yes. No!
And it's so good that they tried to redo it in the new series with the I am your soldier bit in Victory of the Daleks. And again, that nobody's listening to the Doctor. But it doesn't have the sheer panic that nobody's listening to him and he knows that this Dalek is going to kill everyone. There's an incredible frustration and tension in that because we know as well as the Doctor what that Dalek is going to do.
So of course, also Victory of the Daleks is crap.
I thought it was decent with a bunch of crap in it that I think Mark Gatiss was obliged to do to fit in with the arc of the series.
Yeah, probably. I still think it's awful. And I won't forgive anyone for it. But yes, that is one where I'm thinking, yes, that would be... Also because we know that Dalek knows who the Doctor is. Even though he's regenerated, the Dalek knows that's the Doctor. And I think that's what is ultimately creepy about it.
Right.
I think well, maybe...
Shall we number three?
Yes, okay, sure.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember if the Dalek knows who the Doctor is. Well, am I supposed to remember something like that?
I don't know. It was just something else. Anyway, the point is, number three is one of those iconic cliffhangers. This may be further up your list than mine. I have a feeling that we will both share this one. Who knows? We'll see. But to me, it's part three, Caves of Androzani.
I knew you'd choose that one. It's not on my list, though.
Well, this one to me is a fantastic moment. Which is basically the Doctor's equivalent of nothing in the world can stop me now. This whole story, the Caves of Androzani, is just the Doctor and Perry going, whoops, we need a cure. We accidentally stepped in something. And he's deliberately crashing a ship into a planet in order to just save Perry. And it's just a wonderful bit of badass from this rather weak and effete Doctor, you know, this one who's been all...
That's true. It's the only time the Fifth Doctor ever really grew a pair.
And I think, well, he had to change. This is his change. It was all pleasant. And then finally, it was like, bam, right in the kisser. And I think this is a wonderful, wonderful cliffhanger. You sort of kind of vaguely know. I just love it because it's got... I don't want to say gravitas because that's wanky, but it's just got great balls. It's a cliffhanger with balls.
Well, it's also the Doctor holding back his regeneration. That's very suspenseful, too.
And there's a moment which I didn't notice until someone mentioned it. There's a bit where he's looking at the screen and you see bits of his vision is a bit warped, and it's the regeneration effects. And you go, Wow.
That's a really clever bit of effect, because nobody's going to get that unless they rewatch the story. Yeah,
absolutely. And
the audience at the time could not possibly have picked up on what was going on.
And this is... That was just a... marvelous. Marvelous.
I was tempted to put that one in my list, so I'm with you, but it's got to remain in the good bucket
for
me.
Fair. Your number three?
My number three, another iconic one, I'm afraid. To be fair, this is the last one on my list. Tomb of the Cybermen, Part 2. The Cybermen have been defrosted. There is that fantastic music, and I don't care if it is just BBC stock library music. It's great.
To me, that's the Cybermen's theme. I don't... I think
yeah, it is.
Boom, 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 boom. It's wonderful.
And the Cybermen all climb down slowly. It's a very slow cliffhanger. Mm. They climb down their ladders. They open up the big door in the middle of the structure, and the Cyber Leader steps out, and he's got a head on every other Cyberman. And he walks up to them and gives the old... "You belong to us."
"Excuse me." Gets out a hank. Gets out a hanky.
"You will be like us."
I like the idea. Pulls out a hanky. Blows its nose.
"Where did I leave the remote control?"
But I thought, actually, your voice is very good for that. I can't think of the name. Best classic Cyberman impression I've heard.
Well, you hold your fingers over your nose, just like you're impersonating a 1920s singer. "Since making Whoopee became all the rage."
I'm picturing all Cybermen were all converted from 1920s and 30s singers and stars. For some reason, I pictured the Marx Brothers as Cybermen. "We're going to convert you now. We're going to convert you."
That's exactly what the Marx Brothers sound
like. Shut up. It's my really lame Groucho Marx impression.
Well, give us a number two then.
The second last, this one here. Now, this particular story I love, and I will not hear a bad thing about it. It's a wonderful story. There's actually an iconic moment in this story that I love more than this cliffhanger. I still love this cliffhanger. And this is part one, the end of part one of Greatest Show in the Galaxy. And ooh, this is the part where we see something awful is happening inside the tent. And you see, all you can tell is that there's a reaction from Mags. And she's screaming. And then they mute her scream. And then the Doctor and Ace... Ace is really not wanting to go. And the Doctor... The cliffhanger is the Doctor's going, "Well, shall we go in?" And it's almost like he's saying that to the audience. "Well, should we go and see?" And of course we're going, "Oh, for the love of God, go in now. There's people hurt."
Intriguing. A very interesting choice. And I can't disagree with you. That's brilliant.
That, to me, is one of my all-time favorite cliffhangers, because it's that sort of... "Oh, good Lord," you know, it's that sort of when someone tells you, you know, it's like, "You don't have to jump. Should we jump off the top of the building?" "Oh, I didn't think of that. I was just going to jump off." And then it's sort of that seeds of doubt in your mind. I mean, to me, the iconic moment of that whole story is...
I was going to ask, what was the moment?
For me, it's always, everyone looks better when they're walking calmly away from an explosion. But it's Sylvester McCoy's the Doctor with umbrella in hand, walking away from the tent as it explodes.
Christ, I was hoping so hard that you weren't going to say it was the rap song.
Nobody in their right mind would say that's an iconic moment. People would say, "Fiddle-dee-dee, we'll just file that away with bad 80s rap."
We are both the Whiz Kid, though.
We are. Although you're more Whiz Kid than me, I'd break the bicycle.
You dress more Whiz Kid than me.
No, I argue you're more dressing like the Whiz Kid than me.
Really? But you rock the bow tie so hard.
Oh, you rock the bow tie so hard.
No, you're the Whiz Kid. You're the Whiz Kid. You're the Whiz Kid. You're the Whiz Kid.
Anyway,
no, you're the Whiz Kid.
Anyway, so you're second last. You're number two.
Number two. I am almost tempted to put this up to number one, but Base of Evil, Part 3, where the Doctor is trapped inside Zoannon, and his faces are screaming at him, "Who am I? Who am I?" And then the child's voice comes in out of complete silence. It's so chilling.
Okay.
What do you mean, okay? Okay? Okay?
I just don't think the child's delivery is that good.
They got him back in to re-record that, I'm told. His first delivery must have been even worse.
I understand it.
You understand
I'm
it.
Not a fan of the story, so that's why that cliffhanger, although powerful, is not on my lists, I'm afraid. It might be at the good to okay bucket, but I
find the effect utterly uncanny. I think it's a very psychological kind of cliffhanger.
I love Zoannan's face. The fact that it looks like the Doctor, it's that sort of weird looking thing. I think it's great. I think it's a good... I won't deny the choice. I think it's a really wonderful, iconic moment. I'm not a huge fan of it, that's all.
No. Okay. We're down to number one now, and you said that we'd pick the same episode. Well, we've only got one... cliffhanger yes. left to pick the same story.
And I know that you haven't chosen anything the new series, so therefore we have not got anything in our top 10. Yes, my number one is from the new series. My favorite, all-time favorite cliffhanger. And the reason why I love this one is because there's so much going on. There's absolutely so much going on. There could have been another story that could have done this. There could have been other choices, and as I'm thinking about it now, there could have been others, but to me, this is the one. This is the one cliffhanger that made me want to fast forward time, because I watched this when this was first broadcast in the UK, so I watched it online, and I was like, oh dear God, how the hell are you getting out of this one? And I was so desperate. This was a cliffhanger that made me so much want to watch the next episode, and I couldn't, and it hurt. And this was the cliffhanger to Silence in the Library, because there was Donna disappears. Donna is dead, or looks like she's dead. Donna Noble has been saved. You've got the lumbering person behind you. We don't know who River Song is. And this one particular moment, was the ultimate cliffhanger when there's so much going on, there's so much mystery, I must find out.
Really? That was the number one? I mean, it was a good cliffhanger, but...
It was no Strzelecki.
It was no Strzelecki. It was kind of stock standard, I thought. You know, there's a scary suit man chasing them, and what does the suit man say? Stop, something like that.
Who turned out the lights?
Who turned out the lights, yeah.
But to me, it's because everything led up to that cliffhanger. There was so much mystery of what was going on. What was the little girl's world, their world, and everything else. And that's why it was like, no, you've got to tell me more now.
No, it's a really good story, and I understand it intellectually.
It's
but
not in your good...
I don't know.
It's not at all.
It's not on my radar, no, I'm afraid.
That's understandable.
I don't know what to
but
tell
that's
you.
And I'm thinking about other ones from the new series that could easily have gone into this. I was thinking one that genuinely shocked me. The only cliffhanger to really genuinely shock me was the end of Army of Ghosts when the Daleks come out of the big sphere, or even the end of The Empty Child where they're all...
Yeah, I thought you were going to pick Are You My Mummy?
Which... I love because the resolution is wonderful, which is, I'm so glad that worked. That would have been terrible last words.
That cliffhanger is cut wrong.
Sorry?
That cliffhanger is cut incorrectly, Are You My Mummy? Because we get Are You My Mummy, Are You My Mummy, and then like a string of Are You My Mummies that seem to have been edited together a bit too closely, and it always just sounded really tacked on. So despite being a great cliffhanger... there was some bad editing there that didn't do it any favours.
Absolutely, and maybe that's one of the reasons why I didn't include it, but there was, to me, Silence in the Library was the one that made me, like, so clawing onto my collective sofas wanting to know what happened next. And that's why it's number one. So what is your number one?
There was never going to be any other number one. Part one of the Space Museum. Silence. Dead silence.
That's how I felt when I said Silence in the Library. There was dead silence. It's part one of the...
It is brilliant. We've had an episode of nothing but mystery. A glass of water that jumps back into people's hands, clothes that change by themselves, people who don't seem to be able to interact with the world around them, they don't leave footprints, and then they see themselves in the cases, in the museum, as an exhibit, and suddenly time starts back up again. There's footprints in the sand, there's a broken glass. It's so chilling. It is a masterful piece of cinema, and it is cinematic. It's like a big... It fills your entire brain. There is no room for anything else. Shame the rest of the story doesn't quite live up to it, but as a cliffhanger and as a first episode, that takes the money and runs.
Sorry, I'm trying really hard. I'm really struggling to agree.
Oh, come on, let's have it.
The whole story is
what
awful,
don't you like?
And that one is, to me, I think it just goes on for far too long.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because the episode is frustratingly dull. I think
it's dull.
It is. It really is. I don't remember much, if anything, about it. I'm not a huge fan. I'll agree that it's a concept of a time track or jumping a time track is very interesting. And yes, it's also quite good. And they've got themselves exhibits. But, no.
Well, let me ask you another question then. What did it pain you to cut from the list? What did you most regret having to leave off your top 10?
It was definitely The Empty Child, Army of Ghosts, having those on there. Actually, also Bad Wolf's ending, because it's so iconic with Christopher Eccleston with his no, I think it's quite cool. But from the classic series, I was thinking about these, and I think I was struggling to... I put Deadly Assassin off there, even though that was really, really good. Funny enough, as I was thinking of cliffhangers, I kept thinking of the really crap ones, or really crap stories. Those are the ones that come into my head, like the worst possible cliffhangers, and we'll talk about them shortly. I'm just trying to think, what else really pained me?
The one I really regretted, and it wasn't even like number 11, because it's not that good a cliffhanger, but I really hated to leave it off just because of this one line, and I can do it for you. It's moments like this that give me a real feeling of job satisfaction.
I forgot about the Sun Makers. A fantastic story. Yeah.
Good cliffhanger too. It's a solid cliffhanger, but I don't know. I don't think that it's
Because you know
that
she's,
high up there.
You know she's
despite
got to
escape, the amazing line.
Yeah, that's a great moment. I think Earthshock Part 3 was probably my main one that I because the Cybermen advancing. Mm. I think that's a lot better cliffhanger than the Part 1 of Earthshock with the reveal of the Cybermen. That's not all that exciting, but seeing the them marching towards you with that wonderful Malcolm Clarke score, I think is probably the one that pains me to leave off. But then all it's the ones you mentioned that really inspire me. It's like, oh, of course, the Deadly Assassin. That's a really great choice.
Well, part of the nice thing about having two people is that you can get coverage of more than 10 stories, so you can rely on me having picked up a few.
And it's really lovely.
And I can rely on you having picked up a few that I didn't think of.
Like, to me, there's several. And whenever I think of a terrible cliffhanger,
let's have it.
I think
what's
of one
the terrible cliffhangers?
Either A, been tacked on, or B, used terrible end-of-episode acting. And the one I keep thinking of is Part 3 of Castrovalva, which is, we're caught in a recursive occlusion! It's a space-time trap! Oh, that's awful.
I like that cliffhanger. I thought that was okay. Oh, no, I have worse. And it is a Peter Davison Part 2 of Caves of Androzani, where the magma beast is stalking them. And the Doctor's howling up behind a rock. And the resolution to this is the magma beast just sort of walks in the opposite direction.
I think it's primarily because
the magma beast is just
awful.
What was that? What was that?
It's a man in a suit. It's awful. I just try to think of some other really terrible cliffhangers. Carp.
Ooh. Pick me. Keys of Marinus. The screaming jungle where Susan starts screaming for no apparent reason. And the resolution is she stands up and goes, oh, it's gone
that
now.
That just shows you, I don't even remember. I haven't watched Keys of Marinus in ages. Because it's just terrible. And long.
It's the one where... I love the Keys of Marinus. And it's the precursor to a really good episode where there's all the booby traps. And Ian and Barbara get entangled in those. But Susan starts screaming for absolutely no reason. It's like, cut to cliffhanger. Boom. There you go. Or there's that awful, awful Terry Nation one earlier in Keys of Marinus, where it's Barbara's travel dial.
Yeah.
Look, there's blood on it.
Oh, that makes me want to vomit into my own scorn.
Come on, well, you've got to have some other crap ones up your sleeve. Let's have them.
Oh, there's so many, and I can't think of... Like, I'm trying... Like, for me, the ultimate, because it was such... Like, to me, I think I hate the clipper because I hate the episode. But the part two of Planet of Spiders, the overly long, unnecessary chase sequence, it's not all right. No, I'm putting my foot down. They go in this over.
It's not great. It's probably not even in the good bucket, but it's certainly not the worst.
It goes on for far too long for a start, this chase sequence, and they just disappear at the end. I mean, what was the point of the chase sequence?
Shut up.
There was no
drama. Drama was the point of the chase sequence.
There wasn't even any drama. It was a lot of smug looking at basically John Pertwee having a good time in various vehicles.
Well, yeah, but when John Pertwee has a good time, you have a good time. Well,
he is that unyieldingly high status. You kind of feel like, you know, I'm having a good time. Yes, Mr. Pertwee, I'm sorry. then, of course, every bad cliffhanger, I think a terrible story is like Time Lash is a terrible cliffhanger. Actually, because I've watched it.
You love Time Lash. What do you mean, Time Lash?
When I say I like it, I don't love it. I just don't think it's that bad. I just think it's got a terrible, terrible cliffhangers. Because, of course, I watched it on VHS, the Australian VHS, where they inserted two more cliffhangers in it. So there's one, the first episode one cliffhanger of the first 25 minutes is the TARDIS arriving. the main cliffhanger has that terrible, prepare yourself for the Time Lash, Doctor. Those people leave with a scream. And then there's it's just awful. The Five Doctors edited cliffhangers. The Master walks down some stairs. Yeah.
That's not that bad. They're all much worse.
Legopolis Part 1.
What's wrong with Legopolis Part 1?
The Doctor sees that the policeman and Aunt Lavinia have been turned into Barbie dolls.
Yeah, that was alright. What's wrong with that?
It's poorly realised. It's comical. It's comical.
I said it was comical to the actress who played Aunt Lavinia, and she looked at me with this horrified expression, like, no, it was really scary. Yeah, sure, why not?
Yes, you and your soirees with Dudley Simpson and Aunt Lavinia.
As I was saying to Dudley, done as I said. Oh, no, you know what I regret leaving off the list, but there wasn't room for it.
What's that?
Episode 1 of the arc, where they come back and they find out the Statue of Humanity has been completed with a monoid head.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a reasonable one. I forget these because I hate the story.
It is an utterly shithouse story, and it's such a shame because I loved that story so much the first time I saw it, and I still think that cliffhanger is very good, but the monoids are just awful with their security kitchen and their terrible ability to lie. There's that scene in episode, I don't know, 3 or 4, where Dodo says, you're up to something, aren't you? And the monoid goes, no, not me.
I think if I pour through my head, I'd just be but there are terrible cliffhangers. But cliffhangers, I just still think, we both agree that the reason why things are iconic is because they have a great moment of drama, or that they have, that they're game-changing, or that they just, they speed up a story, or you don't expect them, or that they just have this wonderful sense of mystery. And I think that's what makes a good cliffhanger. A bad cliffhanger will always be tacked on, or, you know, just someone in a, you know, would be like Time Flight, the Master takes off, or the King's Demons, the guy who's clearly Anthony Ainley in a bad accent, turns out to be Anthony Ainley as the Master. So that's the end of the Carnival of Bastards, and we'll be back again soon with something else of a crazy discussion. But until then, I'm David Innes.
I've been St. John Karp.
And have a very good night. Cue title music.
You dare lay the rotting fruits of your own incompetence at my door?
We're caught in a recursive occlusion.